Hello, my name's Steve, I'm an addict.
Hi Steve.
It's good to be here, it's good to be in a meeting, it's good to be clean. I haven't done this for ages. So where am I? I'm an addict, my name's Steve. I haven't used since the 8th of February 2001. Thanks to Narcotics Anonymous, not thanks to me. And I attend meetings regularly, I do service, I have a sponsor. I sponsor. My home group is the Thursday night Bermondsey It Works How and Why group. And I love being in the NA. That's it. I'm joking. We were reading step one out of this last night, and there were loads of it that jumped out at me. I shared this recently. I was in a treatment centre in the West Country, and I stayed clean now. I didn't learn much, certainly didn't learn anything about my disease. Wasn't 12-step treatment centre. But what I did, one of two things I got there, I found NA, and I got a copy of this book. This fella came in, and he was only there for a day or two. He went off committing some sort of crime. But he left his book there, and I thought, do you know what, I'll have that. One day that might come in handy. And it took me a few years to read it. And when I read it, I thought, why didn't you read this before? And I love this book now. It's, Anyway, so the bit that okay. I started using quite young with mates, and then I left school and I continued to use, and then I went through a period of new experiences with quite a few different substances over a relatively short period of time, and and at that point, I kind of lost touch with reality, really. In some ways, I'd lost it previously, but I genuinely lost it then. I don't know. I was with my sponsor one day, and as I was leaving his flat, we were walking across the room towards the door, and he asked me, he said, do you think you were born an addict? And I said, I don't know, but I definitely wasn't right spiritually, you know, and I could see that, you know. And I don't know whether I was born like that. I'm inclined to think it could have been some quite traumatic stuff to me as a little kid when I was young, or it could just be me, but I just wasn't right. I was daydreamer, totally disconnected, like looking back, I hated being a kid. I hated being in the family I was in. I hated going to school. And I it could have just been me. I just felt really uncomfortable. I felt embarrassed about who I was. I wanted to be somebody different, anybody different, nobody in particular. And so, and when I used, it kind of, it dealt with a lot of my unmanageability. You know, it allowed me to cope. And not to cope in a successful way, but to manage it, to get through life. And really, really not successfully, believe me. I used for a long time and I was spectacularly unsuccessful at it. I really was, you know. So I just go back to this bit. So, I mean, so, I think some people come in and they grasp step one. And I, like when I came here, I went off, I got clean in a place in North London. And I went there because I was in crisis and I just could not cope anymore. And then I went off for another 6 months. Then I came back to London and I started coming to meetings regularly. And I was a nervous wreck and I didn't understand anything. I didn't know, you know, things had changed. And I don't know whether it was just where I was going to meetings at that time, but nobody was coming up to me and saying, listen, this is what you need to do. Or maybe I was unapproachable, I don't know. But it seemed like a different world to what I experience now. And so the two bits of this paragraph, some of us realised our lives had become unmanageable because we felt out of control emotionally or began to feel guilty about our drug use. Some of us have lost everything, our homes, our families, our jobs, our self-respect. Some of us never learned how to function as human beings at all. That's my category. And regarding the losing things, I for a long time thought, well, I didn't have anything to lose. Well, the reason was because I lost them very young. The home, family, self-respect. And then the last sentence of that paragraph, whatever our individual circumstances, our lives have been governed by obsessive, compulsive, self-seeking behaviour, and the end result has been unmanageability. So what I'm saying is, the unmanageability was the thing that struck me. I had to learn about the obsession and compulsion, and it took me a while, and because it took me a while, I spent probably 18 months getting sicker before I started to get better, you know. For quite a while, I was managing by getting restored to sanity by going to a meeting every day, but bit by bit, I was kind of, the bits that were sticking me together weren't sticking very well. And I think, and I don't know how long I would have lasted if I hadn't. I can't really take responsibility for it. If something or someone or whatever it was hadn't encouraged me to reach out and ask for help. And I did that. I had done it once before, and I had a sponsor, and the relationship, you know, it was somebody I'd met and I quite liked, and I don't think you'd mind me saying this, but it was a bit like the blind leading the blind, or as I heard someone else share earlier in my recovery, the stupid leading the stupid. you might not like that bit. But anyway, I at that point I ended that relationship, and I thought, you know, I'll look around, because I looked around for ages before I got a sponsor, because I was too scared to ask anyone. Let me just go back a little bit. So I used for a long time. and I used different substances and different combinations, and I found myself in all sorts of scrapes. I live with a pain condition today that is a long time consequence of my using, like a long time, over 40 years ago when I did some damage. And I never really, I mean, I've got the bones stuck together, but I never really fully got treated until I came at the recovery. And using, you know, I didn't know how not to use, really. Early into my using, I remember one fella saying, "I'm not doing that again." And I thought, "What's the matter with you?" You know, and actually, I got to know his younger sister really well. She's still a good friend. And going back not that many years, she said, I was speaking to my brother. She said, I was telling him how well you're doing. I thought, yeah, 36 years later, you know, and that's, you know. So using took me kind of, that I was kind of led by the nose by my using. You know, I didn't really have any, it wasn't like it was choice, it was just where I went and what was going on and what I did. As I say, I lost contact with my family, and lost my home, and I never really had a home up until I moved into where I live now. Like, I'd stayed at different places, and I lived places casually a couple of times, but I never really had any belonging anywhere. And so sometimes using was the only thing to do, you know, just to tag along and use, and then find somebody else. It kind of escalated towards the end, and although saying that, in some ways the end wasn't as bad as some. There was a period from the mid 80s up until the to the mid 90s that were bloody dreadful, and that sounds quite polite. Like they were actually horrible, you know. And then right at the end, I've been housed in South London. I come from East London. I've been housed in South London, but I couldn't be on my own. I didn't know how to be on my own. So within no time at all, I had everybody using there. They all come back from whatever they've been doing that day and use their drugs and turn me on and what have you. And I did, things really did feel bad, but in a different way than before. I was just kind of worn down, exhausted. I was sharing this the other day. I felt what I imagined an 80-year-old man like feel. Actually, it was probably worse, because I know 80-year-old men now, and they seem a lot happier than I was then. And you know, and I had all these people using, and it was all down to me. But I ended up, I walked out of there one, something like October, November, and I just had this feeling, I started putting warm clothes on, And I walked out and I went up to Waterloo and I slept rough for a couple of weeks with, you know, people I met. And eventually I went out. And I went home because I was due to get some money. But when I did go back home, I started to seek help. And that was kind of when my journey into recovery began, really. I did a referral to this place in North London, North East London, and funny, my friend was sharing about his experience of going in there the other night, and mine wasn't that dissimilar. The only thing is, when they offered me food, I took it. You know, I was so hungry, and immediately I was in a safe place. My things just changed. Like, I just felt safe, and there were people there that, you know, that were used to going in and out of institutions and treated it quite lightly. But I didn't want to get chucked out. Where was I going to go? You know, I was 44 when I got clean, 45 when I came to my first meeting. And anyway, so I started to feel better. And I had a community care assessment, and the geezer said, I'm willing to fund you. He said, you need to, you know, you need help. And so I went off to this place. Actually, there was a woman who used to do the resettlement, and she called me up to see her and said these two places she'd found, and she gave them to me, and I read through them, and they were similar, except at the bottom of one it said 12 step, and at the other one it didn't say 12 steps. So I chose the one that didn't say 12 step, and I had no idea why. You know, I knew nothing about 12 step. It just seemed like something that, I don't know, just seemed scary. And yet, at the same time, the first people that carried the message to me were people in that detox who had been in recovery previously, and they each said they knew the only way they were going to get clean and stay clean was in NA. So I went off to this place, and like, I really, really, really wasn't well. When I look back, you know, I really wasn't well. Total denial, really, and not. But I did come to NA. We went to one meeting, a really big meeting, Corpus Christi, and we didn't stay, and so I didn't really experience the meeting. But the first meeting I went to that I felt I was in a meeting was on a Saturday evening, I think, 5:15, and it was smaller, and I was able to kind of, I wouldn't say relax. I was a good couple of years off the stage where I was able to relax anywhere. But I started to listen and hear people speak, and I think what had happened, I'd been ground down by what I now know to be my disease, and I'd become teachable, you know. Through desperation, I'd reached the place where I could hear, you know. Yeah. And the people I went with, some of them were they were all a bit flaky to me by then. I don't know if I'm going to come again. I thought, well, I'm coming. And that was big for me, to make a decision that no matter what anyone else did, I was going to do. I was always a follower, you know. Maybe followed different people to the ones I was with, but I always followed someone. But I went back and I actually, I think it was the first time there, at the end of the meeting, I just stood around because I didn't want to leave without getting a hug. I wanted to feel that I belonged somewhere, that they might take me, mm-hmm. they might sign me up. And So time came to leave, and I decided to come back to London. I had to go to the council to get the keys to my flat, because a couple of days after I got into detox, that a member of staff came up to my room. He said, "There's a phone call for you." And I went down. It was a drugs worker. He said, "Your place got raided this morning." I said, "Oh, fucking hell." Got out of there in time. And he said, "It's all right." He said, "They boarded it up and blah, blah, blah." Then the idea was, when I finished treatment, I'd go back and get the keys. And if it didn't feel safe, I would then go and present myself at the homeless persons unit and see if they would take me on, like that I had made myself voluntarily homeless. Anyway, that was the process that happened. I mean, within that, the afternoon I got back there, I dumped my bag and went up to Cannington Park to it was the DHSS then, I keep changing names. But by the time I came back, somebody got in. They must have got in from above, it was weird, because my bag had been searched. There was nothing to take anyway. So I went from there, I went to Peckham and I went to the homeless persons unit, and I waited, and then they put me in a room above a pub in Lehigh Road. And although it was above a pub, I didn't have to go in the pub. There was a staircase, like an iron fire escape staircase. And it was a little room. I had a telly that although I never was there, I'd watch it much. But I was safe there. And I just used that as a base. And I came to meetings. I started volunteering where I met Fake in Streatham almost immediately. And going to meetings, and that was what I'd go to a meeting lunchtime, go back, have something to eat, come back out again, just keep moving. And also, because the only people I knew in South London were people that I'd used with, there wasn't anyone that was a friend on any level, really. And that's just the way it was. I didn't go to local meetings. I did a lot of my meetings in Camden. Maybe that was why I found them so strange. And North East London. Like, my first home group was Hoxton on a Monday evening. And I kind of... Yeah, and I felt like that was kind of nearer where I come from. That felt like more... I just think I needed to keep moving and I didn't need to be hanging about. But I still live in reasonable distance of where I finished up before coming into recovery. And I've only ever seen, I think, two or three people that used in my flat, and not really to speak to us in this. This geezer on the bike, this mad bastard in the chemist getting his script, and somebody else. So, and I think that's because I live a normal life and the kind of people that I knew then aren't around at normal times. So I was there until when they established I hadn't made myself voluntarily homeless, they put me in a place in Camberwell, a council-run hostel. there was just a couple of geezers in there. They drank, but not proper drinking. You know what I mean? They weren't like, you know, the place was safe. And I was there, and then in July the 5th, 2002, I got housed. And I've been in the place where I am now ever since. And I've not had any sign of any trouble. I mean, I got burgled, but I mean, I haven't had any undesirables. Only him. In. And, yeah, so... So yeah, so going back, so I finished the relationship with that first sponsor, and it, by chance, I don't know if it's by chance or by design, I finished up asking someone else to sponsor me on the following Saturday at that 5:15 meeting that was mentioned before in Bloomsbury. And I worked through the steps with him and he sponsored me for almost 10 years, and then I made a move. I've been thinking about it on and off for a couple of years. There was things that didn't feel right for me. And then there was a fella, I heard him share here, and I saw him in a couple of other places. And I really liked the way he conducted himself and approached this stuff. And he ended up becoming my next sponsor. When I asked him to sponsor me, he was half my age. He had a year less clean time. And it's about 6 or 7 years now I've been with him. He moved back to America, and we Skype, and I really, really value our relationship. Things have changed for me. You know, I think if you stick around, things will inevitably change for you, you know. I've possibly grown up in NA. I continue to work the steps, you know. Do you know, at my home group, we read a step 1 week and a tradition the other week. The other week. And the week before last, we read tradition 12. And at the bottom of the first page, 209, there's a phrase, I'll read the sentence, we do this not only out of enlightened self-interest, but out of our sense of responsibility to our fellow addicts. The principle of NA unity comes before the fulfillment of our personal wishes. That phrase, enlightened self-interest, is how I would, if somebody asked, what did spirituality mean to me? That would be it, that phrase, enlightened self-interest. And as we read on, actually, I think it's in the first page. There's a lot about selflessness in that tradition. And that's, for me, that's essential, you know. The anonymity being the foundation of all our traditions. I get a bit funny when I'm in a meeting and I don't read the traditions. I think my experience is that sometimes the traditions are the most important thing you'll hear in a meeting, because without the traditions, we don't have any groups. Without the groups, I don't have anywhere to go. You know, I came here because I had nowhere else to go. You know, this was like, as I say, I was beaten in that place of reasonable, but that's where I just came. Where any suggestion about doing anything previously, I'm all right, I can cope. because I always thought I had to cope on my own. But yeah, I came here because I had nowhere to go. And that's the same reason that I come here today. There isn't anywhere else for somebody like me to go. I hope there isn't, because if there is, it probably won't be the right place for me to go. And so yeah, service is important. People don't do service, there's no fellowship, no means, no service structure. Over the last couple of years, I've done a lot of service with Fike, and we've become quite good friends. I recently served a year as a vice RCM, then a year as an RCM. And as it was coming towards the close, I had this little voice talking to me. And it was telling me that I maybe should do something that I really didn't want to do. And when the time came, to put my hand up and say, can I do that? It felt like maybe I should do it. And that was to take on the position of a chair at the ASC. And the reason I didn't want to do it was because I was quite responsible, you know. But you know what? I've done it a couple of times, and it's all right. It's all right. I've from being in groups and, you know, NA groups and stuff, I've become a little bit more confident at speaking and, confident in myself. And to go back just briefly to when I asked the fellow who sponsors me now to sponsor me, he said, how do you want to work the steps? And I thought you were going to tell me. He said, well, you know, sort of, but like, but anyway, we worked the steps through step working guide, but we also did the traditions and the concepts. So I worked step one, tradition one, concept one, step two, tradition two, concept two. So it was quite a good experience. It wasn't a quick experience, but I wasn't in that place of desperation where I needed something quick. What I needed was something lasting, really, and something that would give me a good grounded for being a solid member, you know. Earlier in my recovery, maybe about 5 years, and then again, maybe about 9 years, I visited another fellowship a few times, and you know, I could quite easily fit in there. But ultimately, this is where I want to be. It's where I need to be. This is where, you know, that other place, that is just another drug to me. You know, I used it just like I use any drug. And this is where I want to be. This is where I need to be. This is where I feel I can best serve, and where I want to best serve. It served me well. I used to say that I didn't have a life to save, but it gave me a life. Well, it did give me a life, but it certainly did save my life as well. At the end of my journey, I just wanted to die. Every day, I said, oh God, again, if I woke up again, I think I'm about at the end, Tony, looking at the clock. Yeah, so if you're new, keep coming back. If you're not new, keep coming back. Mm-hmm. If you don't work the steps, try working the steps. And get some service. There's never enough people do service. I'll leave it there. Thank you.